Good morning, everyone. Hello, welcome to Faith Community Church Online. Let me just add my welcome to you. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Tim. I'm one of the pastors here at FCC, and we are missing you very much. I know we say that a lot, but it is really true, and we can't wait to see you again soon. But we are praying for you, and I just want to say that this week in particular, we've had a lot of occasion as pastors and staff and the elders here at Faith Community to really be grateful for some of the stories we've been hearing about ways you've been caring for each other and sharing resources with each other, and with stories of some families that are really being powerfully changed while we're in our quarantine. And so we just give thanks to God for you, Faith Community Church. It's just a reminder that God is not in quarantine. He's very much at work. So we're glad that you've tuned in this morning. We're continuing a series called Last Things First, which is a look at what we call the Sermon on the Mount. You can find that in the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 5, 6, and 7, if you want to turn there in your Bibles or on your phone, whatever you use to follow along. The Sermon on the Mount is a summary of what Jesus taught as he traveled around the Galilean countryside, healing people and casting out demons and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. Well, this is the content that he taught. And there are two audiences for this sermon. The most immediate audience were his disciples. That is, people who have already said yes to following Jesus and were actively doing so. But the second are these crowds. There were a lot of people drawn to Jesus by his reputation and his miracles and his teaching, but hadn't really made up their minds yet what to do with him. And Jesus is speaking to the disciples in the presence of these massive crowds. So for Christians, for those who are already following Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount is meant to be a part of our spiritual DNA. This is defining for our lives. If you were to come in today for marriage counseling, for example, one of the first things you might be asked to do is to read the Sermon on the Mount. And then we'd have you read it again. Then we'd have you read it one more time, really slowly through. That's how important this teaching is in the life of a follower of Jesus. For the crowds, if you find yourself this morning drawn to Jesus and checking him out, this is his invitation to you and his vision for your life. So the invitation from Jesus is come. Come today. Come just as you are. Whatever may be holding you back, whatever you may be afraid of, it is worth it to have Jesus. So come just as you are, but know that when you come, he has a vision for your life. And this is it. This is what he wants to help us become. Now, last week when we started this series, Pastor Tim Porter started the Sermon on the Mount in verses 1 through 12, where Jesus describes the characteristics of a Christian. If you have it open in front of you, you can see them there in the opening of chapter 5. This is what we call the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, and so on. For theirs, Jesus says, is the kingdom of heaven. Now, having described what a Christian is to be, Jesus turns his attention now to our place in the world. In verses 13 through 16, Jesus describes his vision for what we are to be here in the world. In three short verses, Jesus is going to give us two metaphors for who we are, two warnings for what will happen if we aren't those things, and then he implies two things about the world, okay? So we're in Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. This is what Jesus says. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven. This is God's word. So what does Jesus want us to know about our relationship with the world if we're going to follow him? Well, he implies two things. In calling us salt and light, Jesus implies that the world, by contrast, is a place of profound decay and darkness. Last week, I was talking with a friend about this, and she was really struggling with that because the world is such a beautiful place. How could Jesus say that the world is a place of decay and darkness when there is so much in creation to love, so much in our relationships and our work and all these other things? There's a lot to enjoy and be grateful for. And she's absolutely right. The world and its people and all that we've accomplished sometimes is amazing. But God has a very different perspective than we do. His perspective is much larger than ours, and his memory is much longer than ours. God knows what the world was meant to look like, and he knows what it will look like when he renews all things. God is much more well-informed than we are. So God sees what is happening in dark places all the time. God is aware of what happens behind closed doors when we're not all the time. And God knows the human heart and its potential for evil. God is aware of the pain that we carry, even if nobody else is. As an example, this week I was talking with a friend who's a therapist here in this area, and he said that calls about domestic violence in the metro area have risen sharply over the last few weeks. His office is getting more and more calls about people that are sliding into a really dark place emotionally during this lockdown. He talked about child abuse being dramatically on the increase during our quarantine. Schools are distributing meals partly to feed kids, but also because they want to be able to keep an eye on them and just make sure they're safe. These are things that sometimes happen in the dark, and nobody even knows about them, but God sees it all the time. For Jesus, the world is a place of decay, rebellion, calamity. And he says it is passing and passing quickly. Now, I can picture you there at home. You're 20 years old, a sophomore in college. You're spending a gajillion dollars on an education. You want to be a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, something. You're going to change the world. And you're hearing this and saying, you know, geez, what a downer. Change the channel. Before you do that, let me just say, just listen. People who change the world believe this. People who are doing really good work, teachers in really tough school districts, know this stuff. If you want to be a doctor in some of the harder places in the world, you're going to have to come to grips with what Jesus says about the world. If you don't hear what Jesus is saying about the real situation in the world, you're not going to hear what he's saying about salt and light and why they're needed. And you're going to go into the world trusting in other things. Let me give you an example. Let's pretend that it's 1920, not 2020. It's 1920, and you're in college. In 1920, professors, philosophers, poets, politicians, scientists, they were predicting that the 20th century was going to be humanity's golden age. This was going to be the century when humanity leaped into its next phase of evolution. Forget salt and light. better technology, better education, better government, better psychology. These were the things that were going to set humanity free, and they really believed. I mean, you should go and read some of the things that they were writing 100 years ago. They really believed that in the 20th century, we would see war come to an end, disease eradicated, the gap between rich and poor eliminated. They hosted conferences on these things. And the result was a bloodbath. The 20th century was the bloodiest century in the history of the world by a long shot. In the 20th century, the most educated, most technologically advanced, most psychologically aware nations of the world practically bludgeoned each other to death. In the 1960s, we came this close to vaporizing one another in nuclear war. Psychological ailments of every kind rise every year. Our politics are so divided at this moment, we can hardly get anything done. We are literally cooking the world to death. And I'm just telling you what Jesus knew and what every other world changer has to come to grips with, and that is that evil is real. And it laughs at our optimism about humanity's condition. Spiritual darkness is real. Satan is real. The natural inclination of humanity is not toward preservation, but toward self-destruction. And people that are doing really good work in really hard places, people who are running hospitals in the slums of Nairobi or using the law to rescue children from being trafficked in Thailand, they are not hiring sunny optimists. They are not rolling out the red carpet to people who trust in the basic goodness of humanity. People who are changing the world recognize that it is the way Jesus sees it, and that what is really needed, as much as new technology can help and better education can help and better government would help, what is really needed are new people. And Jesus is in the new people business. And what Jesus says is completely the opposite of what we would assume. He says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the peacemakers, those who bless their enemies, and so on. Those kinds of people, Jesus says, are the kinds of people that are salt and light. So the way that Jesus sees it and the way that we need to come to see things is that the darkness is very real. But there is another power in the world, a tremendous power. And Jesus calls it salt and light. And he wants us to see our lives that way. But just a couple things about salt and light. First of all, salt and light are extremely ordinary. They're very ordinary things. I would venture to guess that every single person watching today has both of them in their house right now, and you haven't thought about them all day. They are common. Remember that the people Jesus was speaking to in Galilee were not people of extraordinary means. They weren't rich, as far as we know. They weren't especially gifted or smart. And yet Jesus says to them and to you, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Remember, in these days before refrigeration, salt was rubbed into food to extend its shelf life. And Jesus says, this is amazing, you are what's going to stop the decay. In fact, he says it, and this is amazing to me, Jesus says it emphatically. He literally says in the original language, you, yes, you, are the salt of the earth. One commentator translates it this way, you and you alone are the light of the world. And that is confounding. It's hard to believe, but look at how these people changed the world. In light of the immensity of the darkness and the depth of the decay, we would want Jesus to find some really powerful people, to find some really smart people. I mean, we get so excited anytime we think a celebrity has said yes to Jesus. But salt and light are just really common. Now, I know that there are some really smart people watching today. I know that there are people watching right now who are wealthy. And I hope that many of you do enter the halls of power like Daniel and like Esther did. I'm not saying that God can't use you. I'm just saying he doesn't need powerful people. My encouragement to you would be get your degree. Study. Pursue knowledge. Run for office, find a cure, do the research. But understand when you do that all of these things the world is tempted to trust in can be harnessed to do terrible evil as well as terrible good. And what is needed, Jesus is saying, is new people, beginning with you. Salt and light are effective simply because of what they are. Yes, they're extremely common. They're everywhere. But they both possess extraordinary virtues. Light, in particular, talk to a physicist. Light is an amazing thing. It's still a mystery to physicists how light really functions. Salt and light both possess extraordinary virtues. And what this means for the Christian is that these beatitudes, these things of mercy, humility, blessing enemies, peacemaking, these are what make us extraordinary. Now, what is the number one way that people grow in humility? For example, well, suffering is probably the best way. What is the number one way that people learn to be peacemakers? They have to be in conflict. What is the number one way that we learn to bless our enemies? Well, somebody has to hurt us. How do we become merciful? Well, someone has to owe us something. I mean, what do you think God might want to do in you and your family during this coronavirus lockdown? I know many of you, my family, we are having to learn to do school at home. We are in each other's business all the time. Right now, we have a running joke. Last night, someone at the dinner table made the comment, this is consecutive meal number 139 or something like that that we've all shared together. What do you think God wants to do in you and your family during this time? Kids, I would just want to say to you, if you're listening, kids, it is so important. It is so important that you get your schoolwork done. That you do it with all your heart, that you do it as unto the Lord, that you obey your mom. It is so important that you do that. Parents, more than all of that, though, more than getting their math done, we have an opportunity right now that we may not have ever again to teach our kids what it means to be a peacemaker, for example. We have an opportunity to teach our kids what it looks like to bless their enemies. So you have an opportunity during this lockdown to help your kid make this transition from I really want to punch my brother right now. I'm pretty sure Jesus doesn't want me to punch my brother. So I'm gonna go to Jesus. I'm gonna pray. I'm going to ask him to forgive me for wanting to do that, and I'm going to ask Jesus to help me right now to love my brother, and then go to him, and rather than punching him, to find a way to bless him. Parents, we have an opportunity right now to show our kids what meekness and what poverty of spirit look like. The next time you blow up at your kids, rather than being covered with shame and feeling like the worst parent in the world, you have an opportunity to go to them and show them this is what meekness looks like, to say to them, Dad was wrong. Mom was wrong. I never should have spoken to you that way. God doesn't speak to me that way when I sin against him. Will you please forgive me? Would you pray with mom? Would you pray with dad right now that Jesus would give him a new heart? And that right there is what Jesus says will change the world. It's that kind of thing that Jesus says is stronger than darkness and will slow the decay. What the world needs are new people. And Jesus is in the new people business. Now we come to Jesus' two warnings, and this has been, for me, just so personally challenging this week. Jesus says in verse 13, for example, if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. What does he mean? How does salt lose its saltiness? Chemically, salt cannot become unsalt. Well, the only way for salt to lose its taste is to be mixed with something else, with sand or something, you know? Jesus wants you to picture a first century housewife going to her salt bag for a pinch of salt and pulling out something that's two-thirds sand. What is she supposed to do with that? Except throw it in, she just throws it in the street. Likewise with light, verse 15, Jesus says, nobody lights a lamp and puts it under a basket. Why would anybody do that aside from, you know, burning your house down? What a complete waste. Why would anybody do that? And that's exactly the point. That's what Jesus wants us to see. Christians, you can't un-Christian yourself. Okay, that's not what's in view here. But Jesus is saying we can become so mixed with the world. We can become so enamored with the things that it loves and so preoccupied with the things that it is after. The word for that is worldliness. We can become so worldly on one hand or so afraid on the other. It's like putting a basket on a lamp. Jesus says to us, what am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to do with a worldly Christian? There's just nothing noticeably different about that. And we are called to be noticeably different. The world should see our good deeds, Jesus says, and praise our Father in heaven. We're just not going to fit in everywhere we go. There are going to be people who find us extremely off-putting just by the nature of who we are. Salt and light exercise all of their qualities by being so different. Light is just so different than darkness. And we are to accept and embrace that difference. That is what Jesus is saying. More than that, we need to help our kids embrace that difference. The next time your kids complain about how weird your family is and how we don't get to do all the things everybody else does, we need to lean into that. We need to say, you're right. You're right. Because Jesus calls us to be different. And sometimes that's going to make us weird. And it's okay. You and you only are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. There just have to be some things in our character, our loves, our pursuits that is noticeably different. Because if we're not, what is Jesus supposed to do with us? For a long time, and I am the chief of sinners in this regard, for a long time, Christians in the United States have been under the impression that to be effective, we just need to be cool enough. We just need to fit in enough. Then people will want to follow Jesus, and it is not working. Sometimes we even boast about how worldly we are. And it is not working because that's not how salt and light work. That is not Jesus' vision for his people. We are to be noticeably different. And to do so, here's the second challenge. So challenge number one is to be different like salt and light. But the other challenge, and this blows my mind, we're to do it without a hint, not even a hint of self-righteousness, pride, or religiosity. We are to be very different without being self-righteous. And I don't know how anyone can do that without walking with Jesus and being filled with his Spirit. I don't think it can be done. A pinch of salt can bring out amazing savor and taste and goodness out of food. Just a pinch will do that. That same pinch of salt, if you put it in an open wound, is searingly painful. That's how they would clean wounds out in the first century before there were antibiotics. They would put salt in it. Jesus is just like that. I mean, everywhere that Jesus went, he brought flavor and goodness, and he made life richer, and people were drawn to him. And at the same time, he made some situations very uncomfortable. There were people who were really put off by him. And the question for us is, will we embrace both parts of our calling? Light is the same way. Light has a way of drawing people in. Think of being in the pitch black of a Galilean night in the first century. There are no lights, just only flames of candles. And you see the glow of a city on a hill in the distance, and you're drawn to its safety. You're almost home. Light has a way of drawing people in. At the same time, light has a way of exposing things we would rather leave in the dark. And Jesus is exactly like that. Some people were drawn to him like moth to a flame. I mean, no one loved people and welcomed people the way that Jesus did. And at the same time, he just by being who he was, he exposed what people wanted to keep hidden in darkness. And they hated him for that. Are you ready? I mean, would you embrace your calling to be someone who loves and welcomes and draws people in, knowing that at the same time there will be people who hate what you are, what you stand for, because you expose what they would rather keep hidden? Are you prepared to embrace that? I'm going to close with a thought from a pastor named D.A. Carson. He writes this: "These extraordinary virtues of the kingdom, worked out in the lives of Christians, constitute the witness of the kingdom. Such Christians refuse to rob their employers by being lazy on the job, or to rob their employees by succumbing to greed and stinginess. They're the first to help a colleague in difficulty, the last to return a barbed reply. They honestly desire the advancement of others' interests and honestly dislike smutty humor. They are transparent in their honesty and genuine in their concern. They are meek in their personal demeanor and bold in righteous pursuits. For a variety of reasons, Christians have lost this vision for witness and are slow to return to it. But in better days and in other lands, the faithful and empowered proclamation of the gospel of Jesus so transformed people that they in turn became the light of the world. Prison reform, medical care, trade unions, control of a perverted liquor trade, the abolition of slavery, the abolition of child labor, the establishment of orphanages, the reform of the legal code. In all of these areas, followers of Jesus spearheaded the drive for righteousness. The darkness was alleviated, and this has always been the pattern. When professing Christians have less concern with personal prestige and more concern with the norms of the kingdom. So that's my challenge to you today. How about you? And I'm speaking to little kids. I'm speaking to teenagers, to everyone this morning. Are you prepared to embrace your whole calling as salt and light? To be people who love and welcome and seek the lost, knowing at the same time there will always be situations, people where you are the weirdo, where you just your presence makes the room uncomfortable and even rouses opposition. What your family needs most right now, even if you are 7 years old, what your family needs most right now is that you would be transformed by a relationship with Jesus. What your company needs most right now, more than better technology, more than better research, more than anything, are people who put on meekness, humility, peacemaking every day. And what the world needs more than anything else are people who understand its real condition on the one hand, and who believe what Jesus says about the tremendous power of salt and light on the other, and who do not abandon the world to its darkness, but who seek to love and serve it in Jesus' name. What will you choose this morning?